This is the IELTS listening test. You will hear a number of different recordings, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. There will be time for you to read the instructions and questions, and you will have a chance to check your work. All the recordings will be played once only. The test is in four parts. At the end of the test, you will be given 10 minutes to transfer your answers to the answer sheet. Now turn to part one.
A customer and a representative of a company which rents cars. There are three alternative answers, A, B and C, for each question. Decide which alternative is the most suitable answer and circle the appropriate letter. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 6. You can see that there is an example which has been completed for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Thank you for calling Carline. So that we can best help you, can you please press the star button on your phone now? Thank you. Now choose one of the following four options by pressing the buttons on your telephone. Press 1 if you would like to make a car reservation. Press 2 if you would like to talk to someone about a car reservation. Press 3 if you would... Please hold while we put you through to one of our assistants.
The caller can book a car by pressing button number 1. So A is the correct answer. Now the test will begin. Remember, you will hear the recording only once, so answer the questions as you listen. Now listen to the first part of the conversation and answer questions 1 to 6.
Thank you for calling Carline. So that we can best help you, can you please press the star button on your phone now? Thank you. Now choose one of the following four options by pressing the buttons on your telephone. Press 1 if you would like to make a car reservation. Press 2 if you would like to talk to someone about a car reservation. Press 3 if you would... Please hold while we put you through to one of our assistants.
Good morning, Melanie speaking. How can I help you?
My name is Mr. Maxine, and I booked a car several days ago to be picked up from Heathrow Airport in London, and I'd like to change the booking.
I see. Have you got a reference?
Yes, I have it here somewhere on a piece of paper. Here it is. It's A for Alpha, C for Charlie, F for Foxtrot, Y for...
Year.
Yes. The number 15, 15, A for Alpha, and G for Go.
Let's see, can I just check that? A, C, F, Y, 15, A, G.
Yes.
Mr. John Maxine.
Yes, that's it.
Okay, so how can I help you?
I booked a car for 3 days from this Friday at 6 p.m. to Monday at 6 p.m.
Yes, a manual.
I'd like to change it for a larger car and an automatic rather than a manual. And I'd also like to book it for 5 rather than 3 days.
Okay, let's have a look. We have an estate which is automatic.
Yes, that would be perfect.
There is a difference in price, though.
For the extra 2 days?
Yes, but also for the size of the car. The estate is £15 more expensive per day than the saloon car you have already booked.
Okay, and how much extra is it altogether then?
That makes it an extra £165.
It seems rather expensive. The last time I hired one, it wasn't so much.
When was that?
Several weeks ago.
I see.
Before the speakers continue their conversation, look at questions 7 to 10. As you listen to the rest of the dialogue, complete the numbered spaces 7 to 10. Write no more than 2 words or a number for each space.
Well, it's basically because the rates change daily according to the cars available. The estate is the last automatic we have for hire for that period. We have a manual estate, which is cheaper, if that would help.
No, it has to be an automatic.
Okay. Shall I debit your card for the extra £165?
Is it possible for me to pay the extra in cash when I pick up the car at the airport?
I'm afraid that isn't possible, as there are no facilities for handling cash at that time of the day.
That seems odd.
It's because the money can't be banked in the evening, and for security reasons, no cash is held on the premises.
Okay, you can debit my card.
You'll have to give the number to me again.
Isn't it logged on the screen?
For security reasons, it doesn't come up on the screen when we look at the booking. Any changes, and it has to be entered again.
I see. It's 3445-9911.
3445-9911.
4425.
4425.
7750.
7750. Okay, that has now been authorised. Shall we send the receipt to your Park Vale address?
Yes, number 40.
Is there anything else I can help you with, Mr. Maxine?
No, nothing else, thank you.
Have a nice trip.
Thank you. Goodbye.
That is the end of part one.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part two.
You are going to hear an interviewer who is interviewing Alan. He made a great discovery of Mungo National Park. First look at questions 11 to 15. As you listen to the first part of the interview, answer questions 11 to 15.
An event occurred in 1996 over a period of 3 days that attracted considerable attention at the time and led to a new find in Mungo National Park, which is the focal point of the Willandra Lakes World Heritage Area in New South Wales, Australia. I talked to Alan Moore, the organizer of this trip, about his experience. Alan, what was the purpose of your trip?
Well, as you know, I love the outback and lead tours of people wanting to go into more remote parts of the country. However, I thought it was time for me, too, to have a holiday. So I packed up my family and we went to Mungo National Park.
Why did you choose this location?
It holds a record of Aboriginal life stretching back over 40,000 years. And, of course, I wanted my young kids to be amazed by the main feature of the park, the remarkable Walls of China, as they're called, where wind and water erosion have exposed this long history.
I see. What was the weather like?
It was unusual for that time of year. The rain was just one continual downpour after another. We were always soaked to the skin. So we decided to cut our holiday short and only stayed 3 days in the end. However, it was eventful. The obvious problem was to get back to the nearest town, a small place called Burunga. But the dirt roads out there are always impassable after rain, so we settled down for a long, wet wait in the park. We didn't really mind because the scenery was so interesting. However, the kids wandered away without our noticing, and eventually we realized they must be lost. So we used our two-way radio to contact the park rangers and the police, and a helicopter was sent. Luckily, the kids were found within a few hours, but they'd made an important discovery.
Now look at questions 16 to 20. As the talk continues, answer questions 16 to 20.
So, the trip was also eventful for another reason, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. They led us to some ancient Aboriginal art. The kids had taken shelter in a very small, low cave that was difficult to see from the outside. We were lucky to have another family camping in our location. When they heard us calling the kids, they immediately helped us search for them. And as the hours went by, they also provided us with much-needed support and encouragement. We really appreciated their help, and as we were already soaked through after looking for the kids for a couple of hours, they even made sure we had enough dry clothes to wear. The park ranger managed to get through to us to lead the search, and when the helicopter pilot notified us by two-way radio that he'd seen the children but was unable to land nearby, we were able to eventually find them very excited about what was in their little cave.
And what did you think of their cave?
Well, after squeezing in, I must say I was impressed, and managed to take a few photos of it before we left. There were many faint markings and dots on the wall. It was difficult to tell what they represented because they were so small, but people from the museum who have since visited there said the markings were similar to some other findings in the area, and later confirmed they were very old. Although it's now a protected site, the children like to call it their cave and are allowed to visit it when a ranger can go with them.
Thank you, Alan. If you go to Mungo National Park, you can see the entrance to the cave and some of Alan's photos at the ranger's station. Alan continues to lead tour groups in the outback, and if you want further information...
That is the end of part two.
Now you have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part three.
You'll hear two university students discussing a social science lecture they attended. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24. Did you go to the first social science lecture yesterday?
Yeah. Didn't you see me there?
No. I was trying so hard to understand the lecturer.
What didn't you understand?
A lot of it, really. For example, he said we needed to study history as part of the course,
but I didn't get why.
You probably missed it. He said early on that we need to learn from our past mistakes.
Right. But he also said we need to put ourselves in the place of our ancestors. Why is that?
I think the point is that it's not enough to know how they lived and what they did. We need to know what they thought.
I see. And I've written transferable skills in my notes next, but I have no idea what that means.
If you study social science, you learn skills that you can use in a job.
Oh, right. Is that all? Okay, but why is that?
The point he made was that in studying social science, you use a flexible and adaptable approach to learning.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
He also kept mentioning all the other subjects we will need to study as part of the course. I didn't write them all down, did you?
Some of them. I think I can make sense of my notes. The first one was anthropology, which he said would cover prehistory and archaeology as well.
Okay.
Then there's economics. I wrote down that this was not meant to mean that we will spend all our time looking at economic theory, but more that we need to see how humans behave.
That's good. I don't think I could handle economic theory. He said something about education too, didn't he?
Yeah. He said we'll be looking at how cultural information is handed down from one generation to the next through teaching children.
He said we'd be focusing on geography, too, but I can't really remember which aspects, can you?
I noted it down, I think. Here we are, yes, particularly in relation to urban planning. It's law that I got confused about. I didn't understand why he linked that to economics.
I think he meant that laws affect the way wealth is distributed.
That makes sense. Now, what are the science wars?
Okay, I did get that. The science wars are about how social science collects information. In sociology and social work, and in social science generally, they can only study patterns of behavior and observe. If you compare that to the way scientists work in physics or chemistry, it's very different because they use specific experiments that can be tested and which give concrete answers. Social studies is often accused of being unscientific. That's all.
Okay. But it still looks like a good course, doesn't it? You don't have any regrets, do you?
None at all. I'm looking forward to it.
That is the end of part 3.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part 4.
You will hear part of a lecture on cities of the future. You now have 30 seconds to read questions 31 to 37.
Okay, we've been looking at how societies will develop in the future and at the increase in the size of cities. So I want to talk to you today about the key considerations in these cities of the future. There are three key elements I want to look at, and these are the new features they will have, issues of size, and the main problems to be considered. First of all, individual transportation will be a big factor in these new megacities as public transport becomes unmanageable. There'll be a huge rise in the use of segways, which are personal transporters, like motorized scooters. As a result, and partly also to reduce pollution, roads will be altered so that they are narrower and will take up less of a city's space than they do currently. Naturally, this is a major change to the infrastructure, and something that may hinder it is the huge amount of investment it will require. The next thing is, what is going to happen to the commercial areas? We do not want these to become even larger concrete jungles than they are at present, so we have to look at design. And current designs for city development include building gardens on the roofs of these buildings to make a more pleasant environment for workers. And you may think that these areas will expand to cope with increased commercial activity. In fact, the prediction is that they will cover one-fifth of the area that they do at present as we build upwards. The exception to this is shopping centres, which we predict will expand with more and more temperature-controlled malls. What may cause difficulties is that the superstores will be confined to the outer edges of the city, as they will be too big to fit into the new malls. Then, of course, there are the residential areas, and these will undergo their own changes. One particular development will be houses which are built from glass, as innovations in this material allow it to provide light without causing problems with temperature inside a building. The residential areas will not be allowed to expand without limit, as happens in some areas at present, and their size will be restricted to a population of 15,000. One issue, which has yet to be resolved, and I'm not sure it ever will be, is how we manage to house older residents. They will be increasing in numbers as time goes on. Finally, how will these cities live? We know we have limited energy sources, so what will we do? Well, something currently in development, which will be a feature, is that waste is going to become an energy source. For example, to provide gas in homes. Also, as new technology and systems are developed, we will find that energy plants will become smaller. Another energy source we could use, but one which raises issues of having enough space and too much noise, is wind farms. Because of the problems, I'm not convinced these will be the grand solution to our energy problems that we thought they were going to be.
You now have 15 seconds to read questions 38 to 40.
Now, moving on to looking at the social aspect of cities, we need to look at housing and how people will live. Cities currently have flats in the centre, populated by single people and wealthier residents, and families tend to move to the outskirts. In the future, the centre of cities will see a dramatic change. We will see many more examples of cooperative buildings. This is where people join together to form a company that owns the building they live in. And despite continuing shortages, there will also be a rise in the provision of retirement homes in city centres so that the elderly can have easy access to hospitals and shops. Recently, we have seen a levelling off in the growth of private housing, and I think that will not change, but we are likely to see more social housing, as far fewer people will be able to afford to own their own homes. Okay, now, if anybody has any...
That is the end of part 4.